Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 36. This is the undefeated Jayhawks edition, 1-0, Andrew. I just want to make sure we get that out there, undefeated, just in case this Tuesday doesn't go well. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing wonderful. You know, we haven't lost an opening game since All-State. Remember that? That was the Drew Gooden year.
Oh, yeah.
But we didn't lose this one. We're going to keep marching on. We're undefeated.
Undefeated.
It was a fun game on Friday.
Yeah, it was a weird game on Friday. We'll get into that. We'll certainly recap that game. We'll talk a little nonsense about my exploits in attempting to watch the game. We'll definitely preview Duke. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Champions Classic, keys to that game. And of course, we'll do our Johnny's giveaway, a $30 gift card. Maybe we should just jump into that real quick. Just a reminder, if you like to support the show, just subscribe to us on iTunes. That's the number one thing. And tell a friend about us. That's the other thing. We want to spread the podcast to all Jayhawk land. And when you leave a comment on iTunes, that actually helps move us up so people can see us. So what we're going to do this time for our Johnny's giveaway, all you have to do is just go on iTunes, leave a comment, say you like the show, say you don't like the show, doesn't matter. Just leave a comment, give us a rating, and leave your Twitter handle or email address. And at the end of the week, we will take all the comments that have been done, and we'll even include the ones that have been done previously. So those folks that have done it before, you're still in the running. And we will draw one for a $30 gift card to Johnny. So please go on iTunes and leave us a comment. Andrew, let's get into this Louisiana at Monroe game.
To support Johnny's here, I believe all of the Johnny's locations have ESPN. Is this correct? Did we confirm this? Even the Ridgeview location, so you should be able to watch the Duke game on Tuesday.
That's a very good point, Andrew. I'm sure Johnny's does carry the worldwide leader ESPN. Here's hoping, anyway. If they don't, then maybe they shouldn't be watching the game.
But anyway, let's talk about Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah, you were there, so let's start with you. Just talk about the game one in Allen Fieldhouse, the atmosphere, the pregame video. Give us a little recap for those folks that weren't in attendance.
Well, you can totally tell the difference between an exhibition game and an actual game. The exhibition games were pretty crazy, but this is when the crowd took it to another level. We've said before, and we told you about the past two games, that it felt like a big game, but this felt like the real deal. I mean, everybody was there early. And we'll talk about this when we talk about the rules and the rule changes, but it was hard to get some momentum going to kind of get that huge Allen Fieldhouse noise and momentum and loudness going because of, when something was going, when something was, looking pretty good, we're going to start something crazy, there'd just be another foul. And then there'd be another timeout. So it was hard to get that going. But at one point in the second half, when, we had a sizable lead, but it kind of felt like we needed a little bit of extra juice, the crowd definitely picked up on that.
That's good.
And it got pretty loud for, a long stretch in the second half. Louder than you'd normally see for a game like Louisiana Monroe. And not necessarily because we were struggling, just because I think the crowd was looking for something to do. It was just standing up and sitting down constantly because of the fouls. But anything, I think this crowd is going to be ready to go, going forward. They were excited to be there. Other than that, it was a good time and pretty packed. But you didn't get a chance to go.
No, unfortunately, I would have liked to. That was my plan. When I saw a KU game approaching, I was like, I gotta get over to Lawrence.
This is how I imagined this. You're gonna tell this story, but this situation, and tell me if I'm correct. It's like those football Verizon Wireless commercials where the guy has to go get groceries on a Sunday, and he's trying to watch the game on his phone while he's buying heads of lettuce and crackers and everything, and then it suddenly cuts out and he throws the phone into the lettuce. That's how I imagine this situation going. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's also kind of like those fear of missing out on football commercials with like Drew Brees, where, you know, he's talking about, it's like an actual I don't know, problem that people have if they miss out on football. They get real anxious. I have that same feeling actually about football too, but really about KU basketball. I have severe anxiety when I don't know what's going on in a KU basketball game. And that was just the case this last Friday. I was expecting, like I said, to watch the game. And then I was reminded by my wife that I agreed to go to a Keith Urban concert like 7 months ago, which fell on Friday. And I got to be real honest with you. I'm probably, I don't know, going to get rid of 20% of our listenership, but I don't even know who Keith Urban is. I didn't know who, I knew who he was. I knew of his name, but I couldn't pick him out like in a group of people. I don't know any of his songs, but you know,
I'm going to stop you. Did he end up being the Australian? We thought he was the Australian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's the Australian guy.
That's him. Okay.
Yep. And he's married to Nicole Kidman, which is,
okay. That's what we thought. We just couldn't figure that out.
Yeah. So anyway, went to this Keith Urban concert instead because I'm a very supporting husband. And the good news is, as I was walking in, I opened up my phone and tried the ESPN, you know, watch ESPN app, because supposedly, you know, that's supposed to be blocked out. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot. And oddly enough, it worked. So if you're trying to find the game and you have Time Warner and you're out and about, the watch ESPN app actually kind of worked. So that was exciting. So I was able to watch a lot of it until that feed broke. And then I got real anxious again. So I went out into the concourse at the Sprint Center, and lucky for us, section 117 was right outside the Time Warner zone, which shows a bunch of games out there. So I was standing out there watching the game until I got a text and said, "Where are you?" And so I came back in. And then after that, I was making all kinds of excuses. Like, I got to go to the bathroom. I got to go get a beer. I got to go to the bathroom. And I just kept going back and forth trying to catch up the game. Eventually, I watched it at home and followed the DVR. But it was frustrating. I got to watch my KU games. It makes me anxious.
I think they should release the KU schedule like 3 years in advance.
No kidding.
So people don't schedule weddings and concerts and things like that. Because this is obviously first priority among people in this area.
Absolutely. So anyway, I was able to watch the game. We could talk a little bit about the game now. The stats are, I guess let's start there. It was an 80-63 game. Definitely did not cover the spread, by the way. 27-point spread. They were not close to that ever in the game. But this was a 6-point game in the second half at one point, Andrew. I was wondering, maybe that's why the crowd was getting into it a little more, realizing, gosh, this game is actually still in question. Is that maybe why the crowd was crazier in the second half?
I think it was somewhere around there, but I think it was maybe when we were up 10 after being close to 6. It was somewhere around there when we kind of needed a, you know, no one thought we were going to lose, but it was
right.
We needed an extra boost, a little extra energy.
Yeah. I think they went on a 15-5 run after that point when it was a 6-point game in the second half. So maybe that was kind of the coinciding with the crowd getting a little more excited. Wiggins led the team by far in minutes played with 34 minutes. Thought that was interesting. Perry was next closest at 29. Wiggins also led the team in scoring, 16 points, 5 of 9 shooting.
And he finally made a 3-pointer. People were asking, is he going to make a 3 this year? But he hit 2. He's back on the line, back in the wheelhouse of shooting the 3. And, you know, I think he's going to be open a lot from 3 this year.
Yeah, they definitely – if you're an opposing team, you want him shooting that shot. You don't want him driving. So I think it's good that he makes a couple, maybe to – get a little respect on the defensive side, but I definitely want him driving more. But it was nice to see that. Definitely, Perry Ellis added. What did he have? About 12 points, 3 for 5 from the field, and 6 for 8 at the free throw line. Andrew White also added 12 points in 19 minutes of play. Andrew, the story of the game to me seemed the 58 foul calls. Didn't it seemed to me like it was hard to get any rhythm for the team. Maybe that's kind of the way it felt also in the field house. 58 fouls. Can you believe that?
It's tough to believe. I mean, the first few exhibitions kind of demonstrated that a little bit, or at least the first one, that this could be a problem. And the clock were at 9:22 when everyone started leaving the field house. So it was an extra long game. Usually those games last right about 2 hours. This was a little bit longer just because there's so many fouls called. But, I mean, that's going to be a problem, and something that Allen Fieldhouse needs to take note of is that it's going to be tough to get momentum going, at least in these first few figuring it out weeks or however long it takes, is that it kind of kills all the energy in the building.
Yeah.
The Fieldhouse kind of needs to figure out, the people in the Fieldhouse need to figure out how to keep it going. Maybe you just keep cheering through the free throws. Maybe you just keep it going. Usually that's kind of a break. But maybe you just got to power through.
Yeah. Yeah, there might be something to that. I want to hear who your player of the game is. So let's see that.
Here's the three. I'm telling you, he's in a zone right now.
I think you can put a blindfold on him.
I've got him on their feet here, Lawrence.
That is a player. I'm a player. I'm a player. I'm a player.
All right, Andrew, who's your player of the game?
This is not going to be traditional. It's not going to be the guy who scored the most points or got the most rebounds. I'm going to go with Connor Frankamp as my player of the game, and let me tell you why.
All
right. So Nadir, doesn't get to play this game.
Right.
Frank Mason has to step up and start. Frank Mason gets 2,004 minutes, and suddenly Connor Frankamp in his first college game gets thrown into the fire. And you know what? I thought he did okay for what was expected of him. He wasn't, you know, Larry Bird out there.
No.
But he hit some shots, he scored some points, and didn't screw up too bad. And so that's why, I mean, it's his first game and his first game to be asked to play a lot of minutes at the point guard position. I'm going to go with Connor Frankamp just for being that leader, even though he's probably the 12th man off the bench in a normal game.
Fair enough. I'll buy that a little bit. It was interesting to see him, you know, kind of run the team. He's not much of a creator yet, so it's you know, him playing backup point is probably not great for this team. I think it's almost better when he's in there with another point guard. But you know, he played all right. I'll buy that. I guess I'll give it to Wiggins. I wanted to give it to Ellis when the game started because he came out gangbusters. I mean, he looked awesome. Scored 4 quick points. Had 2 great baskets, had that nice little move in the post, and then he just disappeared. I think it was part him and part, you know, the team not getting him the ball, but Wiggins scored 16. He was pretty efficient, so I guess I'll give it to him. What I want to hear, though, is your not player of the game. I gotta be honest with you. I think that's my favorite drop, just because I like Britney. I hope that's okay with you, Andrew.
Yeah, that's good.
So who's your not player of the game?
I think my not player is Tarik Black, and it doesn't necessarily show up in the stats because, you know, he had some good rebounds. He had 7 rebounds in the game, but he got out rebounded by that short dude, Coppola, a couple times. I think either because he didn't box him out or was out of position. So I think Tarik Black, while he, you know, shows up as okay in the stat book, he's got to be mean on the rebounds, and he'll get that way. He's got the reputation of being that way, but it was just a little rough this time. And, you know, our rebounding edge wasn't that good.
No.
It wasn't crazy outrageous like it should have been. And I think that starts with, you know, some of the big guys. And he also struggled with fouls. I think he's going to do that all year.
Right.
We got to expect that. But if you got to pick somebody, that's who I'm going to pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Traylor. I'm kind of with you, at least on the big guys. This is all kind of a problem overall with the rebounding. Traylor didn't play very well. He had 4 fouls in 20 minutes. He also had 4 turnovers in 20 minutes. You know, his job this year is going to be coming in and giving a lot of energy off the bench. So I'm okay with, you know, an occasional turnover and foul and things like that. But it just wasn't very efficient, and he didn't have a very good game. So let's move on. What are your takeaways from the game? I think there's probably several we can do, but with Tharp not in the game, it's hard to maybe grasp too strong on it, but what are your takeaways?
Well, I think that Andrew Wiggins needs to drive the ball every time down the floor.
Agreed.
He needs to touch the ball every time, and when he gets the ball in the wing, he needs to drive. I'm not saying he needs to shoot off of that drive every time, but him driving collapses everyone, and it opens up the entire floor for Brandon Green to shoot a 3, Andrew White to shoot a 3, for someone to get passed down low. It opens up everything. So, and you saw that in this game when he would drive, good things would happen. So right. I think that, you know, he had 9 shots, but he needs to drive the ball every time, do his little spin move, and he could probably score every time, or at least get a good look at the basket every time. Another thing is that we're kind of missing our starting the offense through the posts. There was a couple times where we had a good entry pass to the post and led to a good basket. But, you know, we saw that a lot the past 10 years with the offense kind of starting through, you know, those entry passes to the post. But didn't really see that a whole lot this game. I think that Perry's going to be incredibly successful if we can get him the ball down low. And even if he has to pass out of it, that's something that we got to be looking for. We're still a big man team, even though we've got these talented wing guys. Let's act like it and get Perry the ball. And when Joel Embiid's in the game too, I think he's going to be a guy who I think in a couple months is going to be able to score anything, any ball that he gets, you know, without around 7 feet of the basket. He's not quite there yet. So
no, he's not. He needs to stop dribbling.
Let's keep our post game up, and let's have Andrew Wiggins drive more. Those are my two things that I want to see.
Yeah, I think you're right. Wiggins shooting 9 times and Perry shooting 5 times. I'd like to see those numbers go way up. The 2 best offensive threats combining for 14 shots is not going to get it done. That needs to be more like 25. I thought the help defense was kind of poor this game. You saw the other team getting these, like, they would, I don't know, we would crash, you know, that double the ball and then a cut to the basket and boom. It seems like they found him every time. Either we got to do a better job of, you know, double teaming, or maybe we need to stop doubling the ball sometimes. It was not very pretty. I think we got to use the foul calls to our advantage. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, everyone's kind of whining about the foul calls, and Bill Self's defense is going to take a hit. I mean, his defense is built on toughness and, you know, manning up a little bit, tough man-to-man defense. It's going to be tough to play the same way that he's played in a long time. So we're just going to have to play, you know, take advantage of it on the offensive side and get to the free throw line as much as the other team. The other takeaway, you know, hey, we're undefeated, 1-0, 1-0. It could be worse. It was not a good game in my mind, but with Tharp not there and all the foul calls, it's hard to really get much momentum. And the game that I'm looking forward to, Andrew, is this Duke game. So let's get into the Champions Classic info. It's a doubleheader, United Center in Chicago. First game up is the Kentucky versus Michigan State game. Number 1 versus number 2 should be a good game. And then our game, number 4, Duke against us, number 5. First time since 2008, Andrew, that 4 of the top 5 teams will be playing on the same building in a doubleheader. How about that?
Well, that 08 one worked out for us.
Indeed. That's why I wanted to say it. Also, if you haven't heard, the Champions Classic has been extended 3 more years. It will be in Indianapolis next year. We'll play Kentucky and then Chicago and NYC. So KU hasn't won one of these things yet, Andrew. We're 0-2 in these last 2 years. We lost Michigan State and Kentucky. Hopefully a change this year. Duke is actually 2-0 in this the last 2 years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. This is the second meeting in the last 11 years between KU and Duke. The last time was in Maui in 2011. Remember that game?
I remember that game. That was a little last second. Who made that shot? Austin Rivers?
Something like that. I can't remember. Yeah. I think maybe the only guy that played in that game or was around was maybe Tharp played. He was there. I think that might be the only guy. Maybe Justin Wesley.
Justin Wesley was, I think he may have played.
Yeah. So those are the only two guys left. Well, anyway, the first game tips at 6:30 on Tuesday. Our game will probably not start until about 1 in the morning, depending on when the foul, how many fouls are called the first game. But I don't know. It'll probably be around 9 Central Time. So it'll be on ESPN. I am going to the game, Andrew. Will you be watching it here in here in Kansas City at Johnny's?
You trying to rub it in? Is that what you're doing?
No.
Sounds like that's what you're trying to do here.
I'll be sitting in the Kentucky section. I think I told this story, but I'm going up there. I got a free ticket from a buddy and who I've actually sort of never met. I've done a podcast with him on fantasy football. So I hope I'm not murdered, you know, by him or by Kentucky fans generally. So if you haven't heard from me, you haven't seen any tweets in a while, you may want to call Chicago PD. So let's talk about Duke.
I'm gonna answer your question real quick. Yeah, 2011 Duke game. Justin Wesley played 21 minutes.
Oh shit!
And Nadir Tharp played 9 minutes, and that is all we had.
Wow.
Wesley, yeah, everyone else is gone.
21 minutes.
Yeah, it's hard to think. Like he played what's 2 minutes the other day, or in the exhibition.
Yeah.
It's hard to even think about. He was a. Had to be relied on. He was a contributor. Yeah. Had to have played meaningful minutes. And now he's end of the bench.
That is crazy. It
just shows you how deep we are. But let's talk about Duke.
Yeah. Do you want to take the lead on the Duke preview?
Yeah, let's talk about that. They lost their top three scorers from the 2012-2013 season. But, you know, Duke, like Kansas, that doesn't really matter. You know, we lost our top five scorers too, but you know, we're still ranked in the top five. Their first game was on Friday night against Davidson, and it was a massacre.
Yeah.
They put 111 points up on Davidson. They won by 34. Jabari Parker, their version of Andrew Wiggins, you know, right, the number two ranked player in the class, also been on Sports Illustrated, led the team with 22 points. And there was three others in scoring with 20 points for the first time in school history. They scored at 70.4 percentage and 62% from the 3-point range. So it's a typical Duke team, likes to shoot from three, likes to get a lot of free throws. It just so happens that they're incredibly skilled this year.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, Jabari Parker's their guy. He's 6'8", 235. He's their Wiggins, but you know, he's kind of one of those guys that can play a lot of positions. He can guard the 1 through 4. He's an explosive scorer. He's been instructed, Andrew, to start the fast break whenever he gets a rebound too. So they want to get out and run, kind of like some of the old Duke teams. It'll be interesting to see. This isn't really a traditional Duke team, at least to me. It's not a, you know, a bunch of 3-point shooters around the edge and a big white guy roaming the middle. This is a fast break kind of maybe dribble drive kind of team. It'll be interesting to see this team this year. You know, Parker's expected to be the biggest scoring threat, but maybe the 1B on their team is Rodney Hood. He's a transfer from Mississippi State and he set out a year, but he was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school, high level offensive player. Good range on his jump shot. He scored 20 plus. And then their point guard, Quinn Cook, returns. And he's going to be kind of a similar role to Tharp to me. You know, he was kind of relied on to score a little bit last year. But due to the additions to the team, he's going to try to be more of a distributor this year. Of course, he scored 20 plus too as well in that game. Everybody scored in that game. So it'll be interesting to see this team, especially the matchups. Do you have any keys to the game?
Well, remember that Duke was trying to solidify their interior by recruiting Tarik Black.
Right.
And, you know, obviously they didn't get him. So their post players, their interior guys, aren't necessarily on the same level as their 1 through 3. So I think we're going to have to take advantage of those guys, because we can throw out some skilled players down there on the block. So that's one place that we need to really take advantage of. Guard their perimeter incredibly well, and then realize the post isn't necessarily as skilled. And then on the offensive end, take advantage of that. Realize that we have post scorers, and that those guys need to score. So look for Perry Ellis to maybe have a big game.
I agree, and I think rebounding is going to be big too. Both teams can get out and run and score, but adding possessions is going to be the important part of this game, I think. And on paper, we should have the rebounding edge. It'll be interesting to see if that happens, because through the first few games KU's had, they haven't rebounded the ball that well. So going to have to crash the boards. I also think that Tharp versus Cook will be an interesting matchup. And here's a good question. So what do you think the matchups are going to be? Who's going to guard Wiggins? Is Parker and Wiggins going to get the matchup that everyone wants them to be on? Is it those two match up against each other? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't necessarily think so.
I don't either. I think he'll play Hood.
I think so too. It's turning out to be where Wiggins is going to have to be, our skilled perimeter defender. And I think I think you put him on Hood and then maybe do some double team stuff with Parker, just depending on how things work out. But I don't think that we're going to get that matchup. We're going to get this Kansas Duke, Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins matchup, but we're not going to get this one-on-one thing that everyone's kind of wanting. We might, be looking for that matchup, but I don't think that it's going to be, the whole game they're battling between each other.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Tharp plays Cook and Seldon is on Solomon. Wiggins plays Hood, which, I mean, Hood is a really good scorer. I mean, he may be just as much. He's kind of their 1B threat. So it's not like Wiggins is not guarding anybody. And then I think Perry might even guard Parker some. And then Black and Embiid or whoever will be guarding Jefferson. So the one thing I wanted to talk about is how Duke's going to play us. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about. We've all obviously only seen a few games, exhibitions, and one actual game. But to me, if they're smart, they try to turn KU into a jump shooting team, kind of crash the paint, keep it pretty saturated in the paint. What do you think?
I think that's the strategy. And you know what? That's a sound strategy against any team, not just against this specific Kansas team. But I think we're always better when we're taking high percentage shots. That's the Bill Self offense. No matter if Andrew Wiggins is there, Joel Embiid's there, like that's the offense. High percentage stuff. Pick and choose your jump shots. Pick and choose your three pointers. So anytime you can throw a Bill Self team off by turning them into taking poor outside shots, it's going to go in your favor. So I mean, that's going to be the strategy for most teams this year. Duke's just going to be one of the better teams that can possibly execute that on the defensive end.
Yeah, my biggest fear in this game is that, Duke guards basically play off the ball 3 or 4 feet and just dare KU guards to shoot the three, which I think they will. I mean, and if, Wiggins and Seldon and Tharp aren't, great three-point threats, Tharp is probably the best of those three. And, if Andrew White or Green or Frankamp's not in the game, that could be an ugly, ugly deal if we're shooting, 20% from three and launching a bunch of them up there because they're daring us to shoot them. So that's the one thing I want to see. If they're giving us space, use that space to drive. I mean, if that is the one thing, and worst case scenario, more than likely you're going to get called for a foul, or you're going to get a foul called. So it's not a big deal. Use that space to maybe use an extra step and get in the paint. That's kind of the big thing for me. Defensively, though, I think KU is going to have to play a lot better than they've been playing. Like I said, this isn't a jump shooting Duke team like it has been in the past, where it's fairly easy to guard. You just got to get through ball screens. This is an athletic bunch. So anyway, hey, I wanted to possibly get a Duke blogger on. Andrew, maybe someone from the other side to get some more inside info. What do you say we do that? We pause and get our man Adam Rowe of Blue Devil Layer on. He is the 24/7 outlet for Duke. Let's pause a second and try to get him on. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, money. All right, we are back with Adam Rowe of BlueDevilLayer.com. You can follow Adam at BlueDevilLayer. How are you doing this morning, Adam?
Doing great.
Right on. Well, hey, thanks for joining us on short notice. We've been following you for a while at BlueDevilLayer, and I try to follow a lot of fan bases, blogs and accounts, just to, especially the like the Dukes and North Carolinas and Kentuckys, and I think Adam does a great job. If you're looking for a Duke blogger to follow, reach out to him at BlueDevilLayer. Let's talk a little bit about this game. What kind of a game do you expect on Tuesday night?
And as much hype has been built up around this game, I really don't think it's possible for the actual game on the court to match that.
Right.
What I see is two young teams that are still going to be finding their way. When the game comes around on Tuesday night, you've got Duke that's working in. Their two best players are Rodney Hood and Jabari Parker. Neither one of, they've only played one game in a Duke uniform. You've got Emil Jefferson that moved over from the power forward slot to the center position. That's obviously new for him this year. I think there's still some leadership issues on the team. With Mason Plumlee, Ryan Kelly, and Seth Curry all being captains last year, and they're gone now. So that's always a question with a younger team trying to find their way. So if Kansas is able to jump out to a big lead, I could see Duke scrambling to try to look to somebody for answers. But I think the same could be true for Kansas if Duke is able to jump out to a big lead. So. A lot of question marks going into the game for me.
Hey, this is Andrew. Kansas is struggling right now with trying to find out who the leader of this team is, who the vocal leader on the court and off the court is. And it's kind of been some unconventional guys. Who's kind of stepped up into that leadership role for Duke this season so far?
You know, it's interesting. Tyler Thornton, who's a senior guard, was named captain with Rodney Hood just a few weeks ago. They were voted as captains by their team members and the coaches. Thornton's a guy who doesn't really play a whole lot. He's never averaged more than 22 minutes a game. He did start last game and is projected to start on Tuesday, but his role is more of just a calming influence on the team. Quinn Cook is more of a pedal to the metal kind of point guard. Where Thornton is more suited for the half court offense. He's also a tenacious defender, but usually Duke likes to have guys who are going to be on the court a lot be their captain. So I thought it was an interesting move. They paired him with Rodney Hood, but he's more of a quiet kind of lead by example guy. So last week, Coach K was having a meeting just talking about Duke standards and what the coaches expect the players to live up to on the court and off the court. And he actually tapped Josh Hairston as a third captain. He's another senior reserve type player, which to me speaks loudly to Hairston and what the coaches think of him, but also to the fact that they're still looking for a leader on the team. So I don't think there's really an answer to that question.
Fair enough. So it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is a little bit of a different Duke team than maybe traditional college basketball fans are used to. It's not as much of a jump shooting team, reliant on the three. This team seems like a very athletic bunch that's going to get to the rim a lot, even a little bit of dribble drive. Is that kind of the sense that you guys have as well?
Yeah. I mean, the coaches have talked all season about just increasing the tempo, playing real fast, pressure defense, trying to spread the other team out on when they have the ball, when Duke has the ball, and get lanes for their slashers to drive to the basket. Now, that all sounds great, but to me, that just screams that they're worried about their interior play. Speeding up the play of the game is a great way to get bigger teams out of position for rebounds. It worked on Friday night. I mean, they were able to put up 111 points on 67 possessions against Davidson. Shot 70% from the field.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't see that happening on Tuesday night. But it's going to be a faster team than Duke has played in recent history. A lot of people around here are comparing this team to like the 2001 team when you had Jason Williams and Battier and all those guys that were. A lot of really athletic guys that could handle the ball and shoot. There were times on Friday night when they had Jabari Parker playing center, Rodney Hood playing power forward. You had freshman Matt Jones playing small forward, and then two other guards on the court. So any of those five guys can handle the ball and push it up the court.
Let's talk a little bit about Jabari Parker. Is he going to lead this team in scoring? What's his role really going to be? Is he the alpha dog, number one guy on this team? Or is it someone like Rodney Hood going to maybe take a bigger role in scoring?
Yeah, that's something I'm going to watch throughout the year. I think it's going to be one of those two guys. It was on Friday night. I think Jabari shot 8 for 10, Rodney shot 9 for 10 from the floor. And then after the game, when we were talking to them, they're kind of ribbing each other about who shot better and who scored more points.
That's funny.
The team is just going to blend around those two guys. I heard Jay Billis call Jabari Parker a queen on a chessboard kind of player who can do a little bit of everything. And I think Hood, what little we've seen of him so far, is kind of in that same role. So.
What do you expect the weaknesses to be? You mentioned kind of interior play and maybe interior defense as well. Is that kind of what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got Neil Jefferson, who's 6'9", probably 220 playing center, going up against a team like Kansas with the Embiid and Tarik Black, Tariq Black. Who are really strong interior guys. That's a big matchup problem down low. Even when Duke has the ball, when they don't, it's just it's a weakness for them. They got Marshall Plumlee coming off the bench, but he just hasn't really developed as much as was expected, probably coming out of high school. He'll play spot minutes, but like I said, I mean, Friday night they had Jabari Parker playing center, so.
Just real quick, this is one of the most important questions I think Kansas fans and fans around the country want to know. How many Plumlees are there left?
I think there is a sister left, but Maddie Plumlee, I believe is her name, but the brothers are all dried up now.
Oh, okay. I just want to double check on that. That's something that's been in my mind for a while.
Yeah. Duke's going to have to look elsewhere for the big man. So.
Darn. That's funny. Okay, so another question that I think a lot of people want to know, and what we talked a little bit about earlier, is do you think we will see a Wiggins-Parker matchup at all? Will we see them guarding each other at all?
I mean, Duke does a lot of switching on defense, so I could see it manifesting itself that way, but I wouldn't suspect that they would be matched up to start out the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I would foresee that the Rodney Hood checking Wiggins for most of the time. I didn't watch Kansas' game, so I don't know. I'm assuming Wiggins plays the small forward role.
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that honestly, it could be a number of players. Duke rotates a lot of guards and wings. I know against Carolina last year, this is kind of an aside, but they had Tyler Thornton guarding James Michael McAdoo. Thornton's 6'1",
right.
6'2". He can guard anybody. So they call him the pit bull in practice. So he just barks at people in their faces when he's guarding them and really annoys them. So Wiggins is such an explosive offensive player. I would assume that Hood's going to be on him first, but if that doesn't work, it could be any number of guys.
Fair enough. Well, let's take a little sidebar here. While we have you, I think we probably would be remiss not to talk about the Tyus Jones, the little Okafor recruitment. I know that you're following this thing really closely, maybe closer than anybody else on the Duke side. What do you think it's going to come down to, and when do you think these guys are going to decide?
I guess that depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
when there's a lack of information out there, seems like everyone has some, and you don't know what's right. True and what's not. I don't know. I mean, they're wrapped up with their visits. Everything that we've been told throughout the summer from them and interviews is that they're targeting a first couple weeks in November decision, and then signing in the fall signing period. And you know, that time is upon us.
Right.
From what I can gather, they're looking at, you know, making their decision this week. It would be pretty cool if it was Tuesday night, I guess, before the game. I don't see that happening. I'm thinking it's going to be more along the Thursday and Friday on the ESPN recruiting nation that they have. I mean, this is such a high profile recruitment, both of those guys.
Right.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's anybody's best guess at this point. I think Kansas staffs and Duke staffs have done a really good job recruiting both the guys. Duke's been on Tyus Jones for a long time and promised him that they would not recruit another point guard. And they've stuck by that. I know Kansas has been on Okafor for a long time, and the Chicago connection with Jaren Tower to Okafor and other connections through their staff has got to play large in his decision-making process. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think anything could happen at this point. They could both go to Kansas. They could both go to Duke. One could go to Duke. One could go to Kansas. I don't know.
Fair enough. Well, let's get you out of here on a prediction for the basketball game. We're going to give our predictions a little later on, but while we have you, what do you think this game's going to play out?
I think it's going to be high scoring. I think both these teams are capable of putting up a lot of points. Let's go 91-89 Duke over Kansas.
There you go. You heard it here first. Thanks a lot, Adam, for coming and joining us this morning early on. We really appreciate it. Of course, follow Adam at Blue Devil Lair and check out his website, bluedevillair.com, part of the 24/7 network. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
All right, we are back. Thanks again to Adam Rowe for joining us. Really appreciate that. Good insight on the Duke side from the other side of the matchup. Andrew, we talked about predictions. I think it's time for you and I to give our predictions for this game. Let's start with you. What do you think this game's going to be?
I'm going to take the opposite side of what everyone thinks is going to happen and say that people are going to struggle to score. The low-scoring game. You know, defenses are going to step it up. Either they're doing well or we're not making baskets. But I'm going to say KU wins 69-65.
Whoa, way down there.
69-6 is old school.
Whoa.
Old school score, yes.
I do not think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be too many free throws to be in the 60s. I'm going to go considerably higher than that. I'm going to take, actually, Duke in this game. I think they're a little better than we are right now. I don't think that'll be the case at the end of the season. But I'm going to take Duke beating KU 86-82. Pretty good game, though. So I think it's going to be a fun night for basketball generally. College basketball really getting the jump start with the Champions Classic and the marathon on ESPN, which you and I will be certainly watching. Just a reminder, Johnny's gift card giveaway, just go to iTunes, give us a comment, leave a rating, and leave your Twitter handle or email address. We will choose a winner and let you guys know via Twitter or email later next week. We'll also talk about it on the podcast. So We will have another. Oh, go ahead.
Like Kevin said earlier, it really helps if you give a rating, helps us move us up and like get us on the front page of iTunes and all that stuff. But you know, if you like the show, don't necessarily do this electronic stuff. Tell your friends about it, because this is a good show, right, Kevin?
I think
this is
so. Like,
this is one of the better
above average
podcasts you will ever listen to.
Like, as above average podcasts go, this is probably one of the more above average ones.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Okay.
On all of the internet.
I could not agree more. Well, let's get out of here, Andrew. I think it will be a fun week. College basketball is finally here in earnest. We will have another podcast coming to you next week. Sometime I will be in Vegas, as we discussed last podcast. But I'm bringing my microphone, Andrew. You and I will do this. We'll talk about the Duke game and going forward, hopefully talking about a KU victory. I hope very much that I am wrong. So with that, we will talk to you next time, and rock chop. We win together and we lose together, but win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man, but one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawks.